Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Thursday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for the next 2 hours. We have a full 2-hour show, which is fairly rare on Thursday nights because a lot of times we have Thursday night football. Instead, tonight we have Billikens basketball. Advantage Billikens, and they play a late night game. They are out west in San Francisco to play San Francisco, and that's going to be a 9 o'clock tip. So that means our coverage is going to begin at 8:45 this evening, which also means we've got a full edition of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Lots to get to today on the program. Have a couple interviews that are scheduled. We're going to talk with our good friend Will Leach. He is going to talk Cardinals baseball with us. Of course, you can read him all over the place, and he's part of the Seeing Red podcast with Bernie Miklas. And also, we are going to have the newest sports anchor and sports reporter in the market on in the 7 o'clock hour, Grace Ibarra, who you have seen on Channel 4, First Alert 4, KMOV. She is going to join us as we get to know her. I always like doing that. Anytime a new sports anchor or sports reporter rolls into town, we like getting them on Sports Open Line just to get to know them a little bit and for you to get to know them a little bit as well. well. So Grace is going to join us in about an hour and a half here on KMOX. Want to open up the show, and we'll certainly get Will Leach's thoughts on this, and we'll get your thoughts. As always, if you want to chime in, multiple ways to get connected with us. Call, text, tweet, voice message. If you call or text, the phone number, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. If you tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. And then if you leave the voice message, if you are listening on the Odyssey app, there is a little microphone thing where you can leave a voice message. You do that, it comes into the station. So if you've got some thoughts on the voice message, we will monitor that as well as we go through the evening tonight. We'll get more into this throughout the hour. In fact, would like to hear, I'll throw this question out, and probably the easiest way to do it is if you text your responses in, and we'll read some of them coming up later on this hour. Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports and The Athletic reported today that what he's hearing from teams, and he's very connected, obviously, he is hearing that teams around Major League Baseball do not expect the Cardinals to trade Ryan Helsley. So, generally speaking, what are your thoughts on that? I guess if you're looking for a little bit more direction on what I'm looking for you or from you, does that concern you because of the level of prospects that the Cardinals could get back for a Helsley? Does it excite you that, you know, if they're going to bring Helsley back, maybe they're planning on winning a few more games this upcoming season than was originally thought? Just thoughts on it. I guess the thing that sticks in the back of my mind is, do they think that they can get Helsley locked into some sort of long-term deal? Because I really don't see much of a reason to hang on to him if you don't think that he's going to be a long-time Cardinal. Now, I say that, and this is going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, and I'm really not trying to do that. But the advantage of having him on the roster is clear, especially in a year where, yeah, I believe, I could be wrong on this. I'm wrong on lots of stuff, but I believe that the Cardinals have the potential this upcoming season to be very similar to what they were this past season. So a team that is flirting with 500, flirting with a playoff spot. Maybe they get in, maybe they don't get in. That kind of season. Now, it's better if that happens this year because it's happening as player development is being completely reset and they're setting themselves up for big-time success in years following. So in my mind, at least, and maybe it wouldn't feel different to you, in my mind, at least, it would be different if that's the kind of year they have. So if they're going to have that kind of year, well, this past season, they won a lot of close games when they handed the ball off to Ryan Helsley. And that is a really nice advantage to be able to have, right? So that's the positive of it. That if you think you can be a team that can kind of compete, that can be sticking around, being in contention for a playoff spot, having a guy that locks down the ninth inning is a really nice thing to be able to have. To me, if they don't feel like they're going to get him locked into a long-term deal, and if everything I say here, you can just wipe it off the table if they do lock him into a long-term deal. If there's already some informal conversations going on between Helsley and the Cardinals and his representation that, and they feel confident that they're going to get some sort of deal done with him, well then, yeah, keep him around for sure. Obviously keep him around, and everything that we're talking about right now is kind of null and void. But if that's not something that is on the horizon, the long-term implications of Ryan Helsley getting traded way, way, way outweigh the short-term implications of having a lockdown closer in the ninth inning. They just do. I don't think I'm saying anything crazy here. So there's a few things going on here. Maybe they think they can get more for him at the trade deadline. I think that's unlikely, especially the fact that you trade somebody mid-season. Teams can't do the qualifying offer with him. If you get traded right now, a team can, at the very least, if he walks in free agency, they can do qualifying offer and get draft pick compensation for him. You you have the opportunity to move him for, I think, some really high-level prospects. There's a lot of teams that would love to have a Ryan Helsley. There's just so many reasons why it makes sense to move on from him. So I do find, and those are all kind of common sense sort of things that I'm saying. So I find it very interesting, and what I would want to dig into, and maybe we'll get more from John Mozeliak this upcoming week when we're down in Dallas for the baseball winter meetings. What is the motivation for the team evidently wanting to keep Ryan Helsley as opposed to trading him? We'll talk more about that coming up later on. Again, if you've got any thoughts, would love to hear via text. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900 is how you text into the program. Up next, our good friend Will Leach is going to join us. We'll talk Cardinals baseball with him. We're back with more in just a moment here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us. Also great to be able to speak to this next guy. We haven't talked to him in a while. That's a bad job by us. Will Leach joins us right now. You read him all over the place. Follow him on Twitter at William F. Leach. He contributes at MLB, does a bunch of things. He's part of the Seeing Red podcast with our guy Bernie Miklas, who's here at KMOX now. So even more reasons to talk with Will Leach, who joins us right now. Will, always appreciate your time. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm loving hearing Bernie with you guys on a regular basis. I get to talk to Bernie all the time on the podcast, but I just like listening to Bernie. So I love having him on all your shows you guys got over there.
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, like today we do the Gas House Gang Show, which is a video show at 12 noon, and I wasn't on it today, but he and Kevin Wheeler were doing it, and I was just locked in at home listening in. It's so good to have a guy like Bernie on all the time with us here.
Yeah, it's incredible. I almost feel guilty taking them away from you guys every once in a while when we get to do the show.
No, it's good. We haven't talked, I don't think, really since the end of the season. Where are you at with this reset that this team is going through and focusing in on player development and maybe taking a step back for a year or two at the major league level with the idea that it's eventually going to pay off and they're going to be winning at a high level? Are you on board with all these things that are going on?
Certainly, I'm on board with a change. I think clearly a change needed to be made. I think everybody understood that, and I don't think it needed to be a radical change. But I think certainly, I don't think they needed to do a trade everybody away and start over. And I think those kind of like 5-6 year process things, like the Cubs and the Astros. I don't think that's really common or really even works in baseball anymore. I think this is kind of the way to do that. And I think focusing on the major league, not focusing on the major league roster, I think that's a little different than not adding, right? Like, I feel like at a certain level, I don't know if they need to go out and sign a bunch of guys that they're not going to, but I don't think that's what they need to do anyway. I think what kind of works pretty well is the thing that financially makes the most sense for them in 2025. I would argue is actually what makes the most sense for them competitively. Like, one of the issues you've heard a lot of players talk about this was was the idea that, like, well, this is the Cardinals. If we're not trying to win a World Series, we're messing everything up. And the kind of pressure that would put on young players, how they felt like if they had a slump, they were going to lose their spot in the lineup. I do think there's a lot of value. There's a lot of young talent on the Cardinals. It's been kind of disappointing in recent years. For some of the reasons that we've talked about, the idea that there's some of the things the Cardinals are trying to fix. But on a certain level, focusing on young players this year and being like, okay, who we got? Who is Lars Nootbaar? Who is Nolan Gorman? Like, who are these guys? Are they a part of the next Cardinals team? That's what the major league roster should be next year anyway, rather than like adding guys. So I think it makes a certain amount of sense. And frankly, I wasn't really discouraged. I know that they've reached out to maybe they're not going to trade Sonny Gray and they're not going to trade Wilson Contreras. I actually don't have a problem with that. They've actually saved a lot of money from last year anyway, just by not bringing guys back. I think there's a difference between wanting to focus on young players and, you know, rooting for the Cardinals to cut payroll. Like, I'm never going to root for that. Anyone wants to root for that. I think you can look at some of the moves and say, how do they help this team in the short term, and especially the long term? I feel like that actually works well enough with some of the cost-cutting measures they're trying to do. It doesn't feel like they're just throwing guys out because they make money. It feels like there's a certain logic to it. We'll see how it works in 2025. Fortunately, they're not in the AL East, so I think they can kind of hang around a little bit and still be competitive even if they kind of take these measures.
When you take a step back and, you know, look at things from the old 30,000 feet or whatever the cliche is, the Cardinals have clearly fallen behind other teams when it comes to staffing, infrastructure, data, technology, like all that stuff that the Cardinals used to be maybe the best at, they're not anymore. Do you have thoughts on how they got to that point?
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly disturbing. For, you know, we've always talked about this. Bernie's actually talked about this for a long time, about how they've kind of made these cost-cutting measures. And or they wouldn't say cost-cutting. They would say they focus on the major league roster rather than the minor league roster. I would argue owning a major league team, that's something you should be able to chew gum and walk at the same time. But certainly some of the decisions that they've made at the cost of the minor league system. But really, some of the details that have come out have been pretty disturbing, and I think you're actually seeing the results of them. I think when we saw late in the year a guy like Victor Scott, who is a obviously an incredibly talented player, a guy that like has all sorts of things that he natural skills that he has that are very useful, taking terrible routes on the ball like that, and it's because they didn't have an outfield instructor to work with him every day. That is negligence both in the minor league in the short term and the long term, and I think that's what's worrisome. And I think there's certainly been a kind of a robbing Peter to pay Paul that I think has really hurt. And I think the one thing about 2024, which I feel obliged to point out, was a better season than 2023. The Cardinals had a winning record in 2024. The problem was we clearly saw problems that needed to be fixed. And I think it was something clarifying about it. That team, I think Ryan Helsley is one of the primary reasons to even finish over 500 last year. The bullpen really kind of saved them. You saw guys like Walker struggling in the outfield and Scott struggling in the outfield. Guys that should be, or, you know, catchers having trouble throwing the ball. Herrera having issues with that. Those are things in the past that have gotten fixed and have to be integral, not just to what the Cardinals have always been, but to what every team in Major League Baseball is. I think that's been the thing that worries them. We've always heard rumors of they've cut back on some minor league staff and they haven't been able to fill those spots the way they used to. I feel like in 2024, you saw it at Busch Stadium. You actually saw a guy like Victor Scott, who by now, so I know he's young, but by now with all of his skills, he should not be taking some of those terrible routes on the ball. He has too much skill to be able to do that. To see and to learn why that was happening, it's pretty alarming. I'm glad that they've had a year. I think Chaim Bloom's had a year to like look at that, and they're dedicating fixing that. That's the worry, though. Like, on one hand, I'm willing. I think it's okay to take a year back and like and figure out what's going to happen and fix those things. You do have to make sure you fix those things, however. I think that's the worry, is that like they'll take this step back and whatever results come out of it. That if you're going to do that, that's fine. But those things better not happen at Busch Stadium. I think that's really what really hurt attendance and fan interest last year. It wasn't that it was a bad team. We've seen worse teams at Busch Stadium among the Cardinals before. It was the fact that they didn't look like the Cardinals. I think fans reacted to that.
You said something right now, and you're very good with words. I'm going to steal this from you moving forward. You referred to it as a clarifying year. And I like that's so true. That is so incredibly true because, like you said, not a bad season. They were in playoff contention for much of the year. One thing changes here, one thing changes there. Maybe they are a playoff team, but it's also a year where they went out and they spent legit money on Sonny Gray and Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, and they got all these guys in thinking that this was the model and it was still going to work the way they've done things for so long, and it didn't. And that was kind of the final domino to get pushed down to finally say, okay, you got to do things differently. And if this works, Will, if they turn it on and if they get player development humming along and they start developing high-end players both from a pitching standpoint and from a position standpoint, the clarifying year of 2024 could be a real crossroads moment for this organization in a very good way.
And listen, teams lose 100 games sometimes and still don't get like the clarity of purpose. So I think the Cardinals kind of got from this year. And listen, this is, you know, people always like make fun of the Cardinals for the best fans in baseball and so on. But like, I will say, one of the things I love about Cardinals fans is they pay so close attention that like this was a winning team this year. This team had a winning record. This team was not terrible. They were ostensibly, they made moves at the deadline. They were close enough to make some sort of move. But Cardinals fans knew. They knew, and they kind of voted with their feet, right? Like, there have been worse teams that Cardinals fans have watched and gone out and played. This was the year where you just watched and be like, we've been watching the Cardinals for a long time. This is not what they are supposed to look like. And I think that the fact that the scenes finally showed this year, and the fans are in tune enough with this team and so focused. And this is a gift, by the way. This is a gift for Cardinals management and the people that own the Cardinals and run the Cardinals and play on the Cardinals. It is a gift to have a fandom that's tapped in like this, because I think that's really the change is, again, you could look at the record and say things got better and maybe there's still hope for these guys. You could see on the field, and you could see in the turnstiles of the difference it made. Fans noticed that, and I think now that's the understanding now. I think there is a sense, because the Cardinals fans have always kind of come out and always supported the team, I think there's sometimes been a sense within the organization that, hey, that we this is great. We're always going to have this support. We're always going to have this, and therefore we don't have to maybe push as hard as we need to. I think the Cardinals fans kind of making their statement last year. There wasn't heavy booing. There wasn't like mass exodus. There wasn't protest. It was just an understanding of like, you know what? This isn't it. This is not what the Cardinals are supposed to look like. To see them react to that and react in a way that, frankly, doesn't strike me as poorly thought out. I think there's some sense to what they're doing that I found it very encouraging. Again, they haven't really made any moves yet, but the idea behind it, I do understand it. We'll see if they can follow through on it.
And one of the things that does, and Bernie and I've talked about this a lot, they say they want to hand things off to the kids this year. Well, they've created some space at the catcher spot because Wilson Contreras is going to go over to first, although that blocks Alec Burleson a little bit. If they trade Nolan Arenado, there's some opportunities for some young players playing that combination of third and second that's impacted there. But they've got to create some room in the rotation. We'll see what happens with Walker in the outfield. It seems like if they truly want to, you know, quote unquote, play the kids, Will, there's still some things that they need to do to make that happen. It's still a kind of an old roster, even with Paul Goldschmidt not being around.
You know, I thought one of the better columns I saw this last week was something that Ben Fredrickson wrote in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Again, being very in tune with the fan base. Think about how much psychic energy has been put into Nolan Arenado over the last 5-6 years. Is he going to opt out? Does he want to stay? Is he willing to take a discount to make this team better? Is he happy? Arenado is not he's demonstrative, but he's not a rah-rah sort of guy. He doesn't always look happy out in the field. And so there's a question, is he happy here? All Cardinal fans have been worried about, is Arenado the star? Is he happy? Is he going to stay here? Because if he's here, that means the Cardinals can compete. The fact that Arenado has been the center of so many rumors and so many discussions, and I think there's a general sense about Cardinals fans who still like Arenado. I don't think there's been a turn against Arenado. But the fact that there's a general understanding of, yeah, you know what? Maybe he just doesn't quite fit with what they're doing right now is very telling. I find it very telling. And it's not meant to be an insult to Arenado, like get him out of here. To me, it seems like if he does get traded, it will be generally a warm feeling all around. I don't think he's like running him off. And frankly, I think it makes sense for the roster in a lot of ways, in ways that are more than just cut down the payroll. And I think this goes to what I was talking about earlier, the idea of, like, I'm a Cardinals fan. I write about this team. I watch all these teams' games. I am not personally or emotionally invested in whether or not the Cardinals decrease their payroll. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I want them to – I understand that there are business reasons that they have to do it for this year. And with the television situation, I certainly understand that. But I'm never going to be like, yay, you did it. You're spending $20 million next year. Go Cardinals. Like, it's not so much that. But I do think Arenado – just like there's a lot of guys you could put at third base and maybe get some answers. You've got, I think Gorman makes a lot of sense over there. I think putting him at second base, I think he's been fine, but I think it's also been an uncomfortable position and maybe not allowed him to get really set as a hitter and kind of figure himself out. I think putting him at third makes a lot of sense. Arenado, his window doesn't really jive with what the Cardinals' window is right now. The fact that the fans are not like, they're neither get him out of here or no, you can't possibly trade Arenado, I think speaks to everybody just being kind of rational about all of this, including Arenado. And so I think particularly when Soto signs, I think all of baseball is going to just get some clarity and they'll be able to kind of move forward with the winter meetings going this weekend. And I think Arenado is the next step of that. And I think it is, I feel like it's almost kind of nice. You know, there's always so much drama about the Cardinals' best player. It feels like there always has been since Pujols, right? Like, I feel like the last 7 years of Pujols' time in St. Louis was kind of obsessed with this idea of, like, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Are we going to lose him? How do we keep him? The idea that, like, Arenado is still a very good player. He's declining. He's still a very good player. And clearly, in many ways, you still see his jersey of more than any other active players on the team. The fact that the fan base is not, like, reacting dramatically to the idea of Arenado being traded, in fact, actually acting rationally and logically, I think that's a good sign for both the team and, frankly, the player.
Will Leach, you can read him all over the place, recently wrote Thanksgiving Detroit Lions column for the Washington Post, had a piece about the Tyson fight that ran in the New York Times. He's all over, writes at MLB.com, of course, does the Seen Red podcast with our guy Bernie Miklas. You follow him on Twitter, where you can see everything that he's doing, no matter what outlet it might be coming from, at William F. Leach. Will, always great to talk to you. Have a very wonderful holiday season and Merry Christmas, and I'm sure we'll talk in the new year.
Of course, absolutely. Chat soon. Be safe.
All right, very good. Will Leach joining us on the program. Appreciate him taking some time with us. That I wasn't going to talk about this, but he said something there that kind of spurred me. And he referenced the Ben Fredrickson column in the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, which was a fantastic column. Good job by Ben. Generally does write fantastic columns. Really, really, really good columnist here that we've got in St. Louis, as is most of the writers that we have. Not most. I can't even think of anyone I don't like. All the writers that we have in St. Louis. But the I don't know if it's apathy, but I'll say the apathetic nature of the response to a potential Nolan Arenado trade. Is it, as Will said, because people just get it, or is there more to it than that? We'll discuss that coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, 314-436-7900. That's how you text into the program, or you can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. We just had Will Leach on, and Will made reference to a recent Ben Fredrickson column talking about kind of the potential reaction to a potential Nolan Arenado trade. Now, that being said, we were talking about the idea of Arenado getting traded, and immediately on the text line, we do get a text that says, I sure don't want Arenado to be traded. And I appreciate there are people out there that feel that way. I don't think it is a majority of people, and I don't think, if there is a clear majority, it's probably more people want him to be traded. I think our texter, who I appreciate, is in the minority on this one. Although, I think the actual majority of people are kind of like, eh, if they trade him, that's fine. If they don't trade him, that's fine as well. So, in reference to the Ben Fredrickson column and in reference to what Will Leach just said, Will made the point that, you know what, Cardinals fans kind of get it. That the team is trying to push forward and give young players an opportunity, and you can give those young players more of an opportunity if you open up some time at third base, and you do that by trading away Nolan Arenado, and that's why there's not a big, you know, loud, boisterous opposition to it. At the same time, Nolan Arenado hasn't done anything to, like, offend the fan base for the most part, so outside of a vocal minority, people aren't going to be out with pitchforks trying to get him traded at the same time. I would add this to the conversation. There are different eras of Cardinals baseball. You think about a certain era and you think about the players. And more often than not, there are very specific players that you connect. And obviously, eras cross over, right? Like you get a young player with an older player and eventually it becomes that. So, I mean, it's not a defined line. But we're coming out of the Goldschmidt-Arenado era of Cardinals baseball. What have they won? What have they won? They've gone to the playoffs. Haven't won a playoff game. What have they won? In terms of the Cardinals and the expectations for the organization, they haven't won anything. They haven't won anything. So, if you're going to get really upset about a player getting traded, you generally get really upset about that player being traded because of what you think about that player. What forms what you think about a player? obviously the performance is part of it. I'm not trying to be dismissive of performance. And Nolan Arenado, for a while, was one of the top players in baseball. I've said this over and over. A couple years ago, it would have come down between him and Aaron Judge, for me, for a player to pick to build around for a single season. High-level defense at a premier position with a bat that could keep him in MVP conversation. That is a combination that doesn't really exist very often. So I am in no way, shape, and or form trying to be dismissive of who Arenado is as a player. I am a big fan of his and what he has done. But because he has played on a team that has not won, and again, going back to why you become emotionally attached to athletes that you are fans of, it's because of big, memorable moments. What happens when a player gets traded and you're watching the 10 o'clock news that night and Martin Kilcoyne or Tamar Scher or Frank Cusimano pop on your TV and they're talking about that trade and they run the player who's been traded away and they've got B-roll footage? What's the footage they're going to show? They're going to show the great moments from those players because that's what you're going to remember. And with all due respect to anything Arenado did as a Cardinal, and he has had some very, very, very good moments, he doesn't have these huge plays in the postseason, big hits in the postseason, or big hits in September and October that push a team to the postseason. There are huge moments for, not huge, there are memorable moments for him, especially from a defensive standpoint. There are things that he did in games that you remember. But what's the consequence of those things? And in terms of playoffs, not really. Hasn't had that. And so if Goldschmidt and Arenado are going to be the central figures of whatever era we're coming out of now of Cardinals baseball, they represent an era where you didn't win postseason games. So I think that's part of why Paul Goldschmidt not coming back, not a lot of people are upset about that. Nolan Arenado probably being traded, not a lot of people are upset about that. And I think it is connected to there being less emotional attachment to him because of the lack of playoff wins during their tenure. Text message from the 256 says, if third base opens up, is there any thought about Walker at third, Jordan Walker at third? No. I know he came up as a third baseman. That was never going to be his position. It just wasn't. You can make the case that the Cardinals probably failed by not getting him to the outfield sooner, by not making that initial decision. He's not a third baseman. And more importantly, and this is very important, you've already changed positions on him once when he was really close to the big leagues, and he worked his you-know-what off to try to get better defensively, and I think that impacted his offense. He needs to work on hitting. The last thing he needs to have in the back of his mind is another position change. Down the line, is there a possibility that he goes to first base? Yeah, I could see that. I could see him eventually being a first baseman. It's not going to happen for a while. The Wilson Contreras thing certainly made that possible. And we can you see the flashes with Walker defensively in the outfield. I think he has the ability to turn into an average overall outfielder who can make a spectacular play here and there. That's what I would kind of refer to him. Don't mess around with him defensively right now. Goals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, to as many numbers as you want to count are for him to figure it out offensively. And whatever you get from him defensively, that's what you get. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Continuing on right here on KMOX, this is a Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauley, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Threw this out earlier if you had any thoughts on whether or not Ryan Helsley should be traded, because right now indications are, according to Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic and Fox Sports, what he is hearing just talking with executives from other teams, that the general feeling is that the Cardinals are planning on hanging on to Helsley. Text message from the 608 says, I agree with you. Trade him for prospects or guys already in the majors. This guy can bring a lot. Take advantage of it. I think the Cardinals have two tickets right now for this offseason to really add to their prospect list. And they did a pretty good job a couple years ago when they sold off at the deadline. There were some guys that they brought in who are a big part of what the team is doing moving forward. But if they are trying to reset the minor leagues and reset player development, well, adding in some top-level prospects can go a long way towards making that happen. And the Cardinals have Ryan Helsley. He is a bit of a lottery ticket when it comes to bringing in young talent. And then I think Eric Fetty is the other guy, and this was just even more pronounced earlier today when we found out that Luis Severino, got a deal from the A's, 3 years, $67 million. Luis Severino, 3 years, $67 million. This man's making $22, $23 million a year. And this is after the deals with Frankie Montas and Matthew Boyd, where they're each, you know, $15 to $20 million per year. The cost of pitching, it has grown so much. When you're paying Luis Severino $23 million per year, that tells you a lot about where the game is at. So Eric Fetty, who's better than Luis Severino, Eric Fetty, who's better than Frankie Montas, Eric Fetty, who's better than Matthew Boyd, is making $7.5 million this year for a Cardinals team that's going through a reset and is coming up on the final year of his deal. Man, oh man, oh man, if I'm John Mozeliak, am I seeing whether or not there are some teams interested in Fetty? Because he's another guy that can go get you something, because the teams would have to only pay $7.5 million for him. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we take you till 8 o'clock this evening. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we are going to hear some audio from Blues coach Jim Montgomery in front of their game tonight against Calgary. And then later on this hour, we're going to get to know the newest sports reporter and anchor over at Channel 4. Grace Ibarra is going to join us on the program as well. I've always told you, I am honest with you, truthful with you, and transparent with you. The transparent part of what I'm about to say, I'm very uncomfortable with what we're about to talk about. because I think the absolute world of Benji Molina. Love the guy. Man, is he a good guy. You do not get human beings better than Benji Molina. I consider him a friend. I love the way he lives his life. I've talked about him very many times on the things he does that people don't always know about. He's so active in the community. I mean, I just love the guy. There was a lot made of some comments he made on another radio station over on the FM dial, our friends over at 101. He made some comments yesterday about his brother, Yadier Molina, having interest in the Cardinals managerial job. And those comments blew up. It really became, at least from a social media perspective, I think it was the biggest sports story in St. Louis over the last 24 hours or so. So obviously, I got to talk about it. It's my job to talk about it. I don't like talking about it. The reason I don't like talking about it is because I wish Benji would not have said what he said. And I don't like being critical of people that I like. But it's what we have to do kind of in this situation. And we were supposed to have Benji on at some point in the real near future to talk about his toy drive, which is coming up this weekend. And I hope we still can have him on. And honestly, I don't even know how I'd handle that if we had it on, if we're going to go back and revisit this with him or not. Like, it's a very uncomfortable thing for me to discuss this. But I think it is worth talking about for at least a few minutes. And the comments that were made were essentially that his brother Yadi is interested in being the Cardinals manager, that if he was the Cardinals manager, he'd like to have Albert Pujols as his hitting coach, Adam Wainwright as pitching coach, and that he's got multiple offers to be a major league manager. I would like to get, I'd be interested in some clarification on some of those comments that were made, because the idea that Molina has gotten, or Yadier Molina, the fact that the idea that he has gotten multiple offers to be a major league manager, or that there's offers, like, there can't be offers sitting out there right now. Every team has a manager, right? Like, there's no jobs available for him to be offered at the moment. You rarely ever see a team hire a manager where the Jeff Passans of the world, John Heymans of the world, the JP Morosis of the world aren't putting it out there. That's like there's always insider reports going on. So the fact that we have not heard a whisper that there are teams that would be interested in Molina to be their manager, I heard that and I kind of went, you know, whether he was saying that he's just had offers or whether he has offers, either way, that's I'd like to get more information on that, bluntly, because I have a hard time thinking that that's completely the way it came off. I think more importantly in all this is, like, what's real and what's not real. Fans can sit here and, like, fantasize about the idea of Adam Wainwright being a pitching coach. This is not a shot at Wainwright at all. It's going to sound like it. It's really not. What has Wainwright done to show you that he can be a good pitching coach? He's been a very good pitcher. But not every athlete can coach it. Like, this is it's hard. I think Molina, again, I think Yadi has, you can look at the way he played the game and you can say, okay, this is somebody who could manage a major league game. Like, I have full belief that he has that ability. If he ever wants to really be a major league manager, he can get on that path and he can get there. That's the end game stuff. I do question whether or not he has the stomach for all the other stuff. I have a hard time believing he's going to go all in on pregame media session with the written media, pregame radio interview, pregame TV interview, postgame media, like, all that stuff. That doesn't really seem like his thing, but maybe it is. Maybe he'll be fine with it. Like, I'm not closing off that door. But the other stuff that he said that I thought was more interested, Adam Wainwright has a really good life right now. He gets to go be a TV guy, and he gets to make good money, and he gets to be with his family after spending years and years and years doing nothing but traveling. And we don't even know if he would be a good pitching coach, because there are people who devote their entire lives to coaching the game of baseball, who are working in the minor leagues, who are working at colleges, who are really, really good at what they do, and they don't get the big league opportunity. And There's no assumption that Wainwright'd be great at the idea of Pujols as a hitting coach. Like, I know he has talked about wanting to be a manager at some point. It's a lot different being a manager and being a coach. Pujols has hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. He's doing pretty good from a TV standpoint. Does he have it in him? Does he really? And he's got a relatively new wife. Does he really want to be in a kind of a grungy job where he's showing up to the ballpark, first guy in every single day, last guy out every day, being a hitting coach? Like, I just, maybe he would do it for his buddy. I don't know. It just doesn't seem completely plausible to me. So I saw that yesterday, and gosh, I love Benji Molina. He's such a good dude. But those comments that were made just kind of struck me in a weird way where it didn't really feel like this was a real thing and it's a real possibility. More importantly, Yadi said he's got a kid who's going to be graduating in a couple of years and doesn't want to do anything else. At least that's what Benji said that Yadi said. So it's not a right now thing, but I thought it was interesting. I didn't love that those comments came out of his mouth. And I would probably want a little bit more clarification on it because I feel like the surface level of what was said probably doesn't tell the entire story. We'll hear from Jim Montgomery in just a moment here on KMOX. Again, it is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Coming up in a few moments, we're going to get to know one of the newest sports anchors and reporters in town, Grace Ibarra, who was recently hired by Channel 4, First Alert 4, and of course the Matrix Midwest channel as well. She is going to join us for the first time here on KMOX, so that's going to be coming up in just a little while. Wanted to hear from Jim Montgomery and preview a little more of the Blues game that's going to be going on tonight. Again, so far so good for the Blues under Montgomery. They have won 3 of his 4 games as coach, and in the game that they lost, they didn't play very well against the Flyers, and they still stole a point, losing in overtime by a 3-2 score. So they match up against Calgary coming up this evening, the second of 4 straight games against teams in Canada. They'll also take on Edmonton and Vancouver before eventually getting back home for a matchup against San Jose. That's going to be a week from today, so that's when the Blues are finally going to return home. But like I said, let's listen in a little bit as Jim Montgomery spent some time with the media earlier today following morning skate. And as the team goes into this game tonight, he said that absolutely, this is a good Calgary team that they're going to face off against.
Just how well they play the game the right way, especially at home. They're 10-3, won 6 in a row. They don't beat themselves. You know, you're going to have to earn odd man rushes. You're going to have to earn your every foot of ice against a decor that's very active and very competitive.
Calgary comes into the game tonight with a record of 13-9-4, although they have been struggling here a little bit recently. They won their last time out against Columbus on Tuesday, got a 3-0 shutout victory. Before that, they lost 4 straight games. We talked about this with Winnipeg the other day because Winnipeg got off to a fantastic start. Certainly Calgary did as well. Not quite as good of a start as Winnipeg did, but Calgary did win their first 4 and 5 of their first 6, so started at 5-0-1. They've gone kind of through some losing streaks and some winning streaks since then, and we'll see whether or not the Blues can make sure that they don't turn what was a win on Tuesday into a bit of a winning streak. As mentioned, these comments from Jim Montgomery coming from morning skate today, which they did get participation from both Pavel Buchnevich and Justin Falk, a couple guys who have been banged up, might play tonight, according to Montgomery.
Both are skating today. We'll know more determination of whether they're players after pregame skate.
In the last game against the Jets, a game that they won by a 4-1 score, it was a really good performance for defenseman Scott Perunovic. He had 2 assists and a +3 rating. First time in his career he had multiple points. Also first time in his career that his plus-minus was better than +2. So he has been playing some pretty good hockey with a really good performance there. And Montgomery was asked about what makes Perunovic good. What does he need to be doing on the ice to have success?
His feet are moving. He's really involved with the around the puck and playing with the puck in all 3 zones. Like the 4-on-4 goal was a really good example of how well he was supporting pucks, and he makes the good east-west play because he was in position to make it. He's above F1 like we want to do in neutral zone when you're the weak side defenseman.
For him in particular, is that confidence maybe more of an impact on his game than some other players, just how offensive he is?
Well, I think it's both, right? It impacts him. I thought he was really aggressive offensively, which led to him having good gaps. I thought he killed a lot of plays for us last game. And then the forwards, you know, they're getting pucks on their tape because of his vision and his ability to make plays.
Yesterday, we got word from the NHL what the Four Nations tournament rosters are going to look like, and two Blues players are participating for Team Canada as Jordan Binnington and Colton Parayko. A lot of people thought Binnington was going to get in there. For some, Parayko was a bit of a surprise. There's been some people. We talked with Andy Strickland yesterday, and he mentioned the fact that he had been saying for quite some time that he thought that Parayko would get on there, and some people had kind of pushed back on it. Montgomery was asked today about the importance and how he feels about Parayko being in the Four Nations tournament.
He's such a good young man, like as a person, as a human being, the way he treats people, the respect he has for everybody, you know, fans he meets, and then you couple that with the growth he's had from what I've seen since I've come back. His maturity level, his presence on ice is very noticeable, and he deserves and has earned that opportunity to play for Canada.
And if you're not familiar with the Four Nations Face-Off International Tournament, it's going to be the first best-on-best tournament in hockey since the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. It's the United States, Canada, Finland, and also Sweden. Those are going to be the four teams that are going to be matched up against each other, and this should be a really exciting event, something that the NHL is excited about, and rightfully so, and just a great opportunity for everybody participating to be able to get in there and play with some of the best players in all of hockey. One other note, the Chicago Blackhawks today, they fired their coach, Luke Richardson. Blackhawks are terrible. Again, they're 8-16-2. So the Winter Classic this year is going to have two coaches that were put in place mid-season. For the Blues, obviously Jim Montgomery, and he's their new full-time coach. The Blackhawks have just named an interim head coach, and that is Anders Sorensen, who had been the coach of their AHL team, the Rockford Ice Hogs. And they also made some other moves, as Mark Eden is going to be the assistant, Mark Eden, who had been their assistant general manager overseeing player development. He became the interim coach in Rockford. But yeah, kind of interesting that the Blackhawks make their move with a coach. The Blues made their move with a coach. So we've got the Winter Classic this year. When I was driving in today, and I don't know for sure how long this has been this way, but every day when I drive in here to KMOX, I do drive by the Enterprise Center. And as I was driving by today, I did take note of the fact that the Winter Classic logos were there on the windows right at the entrance to the Enterprise Center. Maybe those have been up for 2 weeks. I don't know. But I had not noticed it literally until today. So we are getting closer and closer to that event, which is just a few weeks away. And it's going to, just kind of interesting that the Blues make a coaching change and the Blackhawks make a coaching change. I didn't realize that Luke Richardson had been there with the Blackhawks for three seasons. And that's just, they've been in such a challenging spot. I mean, you hire somebody and ask them to go through what they were going through there, you're going to give them some leash. But I think they expected some more progress this year, and they certainly have not got that. When he was hired in 2022, he was brought in right in the middle of what was known to be a prolonged rebuild. And his time there, he goes 57-118-15, which clearly is not very good. All right, we are going to take a break. And when we return, Grace Ibarra is going to join us, new sports anchor and reporter with Channel 4, First Alert 4, also doing stuff with Matrix Midwest. So she's going to join us coming up in just a moment or so. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we continue to take you through the evening. We do have a SLU basketball coming your way tonight. They're out west. They'll match up against San Francisco right now. Very happy to welcome onto the program for the first time. You see her on First Alert 4, Channel 4. She is their newest sports anchor and reporter. Her name is Grace Ibarra. You can follow her on Twitter at GNYBARRA. Again, Grace Ibarra joining us on the program. Grace, thanks for taking some time with us today. Welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you so much for having me. I love being here.
What has it been like for you? I know it's been a very short amount of time since you've gotten here.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Obviously, just knowing about St. Louis and visiting here a couple times before I got this job, you know how much sports mean to this city. So I feel extremely lucky to be covering sports in a town that cares so much about their teams. And I can tell just from the month and a half I've been here so far, just how much it matters.
What is your background in terms of where you're from and where you're coming from?
So I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. I went to IU, have a pretty good college football team right now, so I'm pretty pumped about that. I went and worked at a TV station in Mississippi out of college, so that's where I spent the last 2.5 years before moving to St. Louis. So I was working in SEC country covering Mississippi State and Ole Miss. So, you know, getting to cover Mizzou now, it's nice. It's not too big of a change from the SEC schools that I was covering down there.
It feels like IU people are taking over St. Louis sports media. You work with Tamar Scher here at KMOX. Yes. We've got Tom Ackerman. I mean, it's Indiana people absolutely everywhere right now in St. Louis sports media.
Definitely. I actually went to college with Tamar, so we overlapped while we were in Bloomington, took classes together, and now we get to work together. So it's an absolute dream.
Yeah, how much fun is that, having that? That doesn't happen very often where you do have a friendship with somebody and you end up in this type of job working alongside.
It's awesome. It's funny. We joke about how far we've come since doing our newscasts in college and how much has changed. But it's really awesome because she was a great friend just before in college. She was a year older than me, so someone I looked up to. And now getting to work with her, I mean, it's seriously a dream come true.
And you walk in right as Channel 4, the new channel with Matrix and the connection with Mizzou Athletics and the football programs you guys did. I mean, this is not every local TV station across the country has the type of commitment to sports that Channel 4 has. So I have to think it's a really comfortable situation walking in and having a lot of opportunities.
I mean, yeah, that was a huge appeal to this job, just how much they're investing. You see sports departments across the country kind of taking away from what they're doing and taking less money out of their sports coverage. And to see someone in local news putting so much money into, you know, putting up new shows on a new channel and having these partnerships with these teams, I mean, you do not see that everywhere. So I had to jump at this opportunity. It's really incredible what we're doing.
You mentioned that you come from, you've been working in the state of Mississippi. There has to be some comfort level because obviously Ole Miss, Mississippi State, SEC sports, you walk in covering Mizzou, having that SEC experience with you.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. I mean, I've seen Drink at, you know, SEC media days in the past. So he's a familiar face to me, obviously, first time covering him. But, you know, I've covered games where either the schools that I previously covered faced Mizzou. So having a lot of familiarity with the conference itself and the University of Missouri has been a really easy transition for me.
You walk in as well, right as the St. Louis Blues make a coaching change. And,
right.
Jim Montgomery, the results so far, it's a tiny sample size with just 4 games, but it's been pretty impressive what the team has been able to do in a very short amount of time since he's taken over.
Yeah, that coaching change happened within my first month. And, you know, it's not something I think when we saw Jim Montgomery get fired in Boston, something that, you know, people thought was a possibility, but just that timeline was crazy how quickly it all went down. And even so, after now that he is behind the bench, just seeing how quickly he's been able to, you know, improve their offense, improve, you know, outputs of these games, it's been incredible to watch what he's doing in St. Louis already. I mean, they're on the road now in Canada, so I'm excited for them to get back in St. Louis and for him to get back in front of this crowd because you can tell just how excited they are to have him back here.
You have not been able to experience covering the Cardinals quite yet, but that is a thing of its own here in this market. Obviously, they are number one. Do you have an excitement level of getting to be able to watch that team and cover that team and tell the stories about the Cardinals on an everyday basis?
Oh, for sure. I love baseball. I went to Busch for the first time, and I guess only time, when I was 13. So it's been a long time. I'm excited to get back there. It's one of my favorite parks I've been to. And, I mean, this team matters so much to the city. You don't get that everywhere. So I'm so excited to be able to cover the Cardinals.
I don't know how much you really follow along with what's going on right now, just with there being everything happening off the field. But obviously, right, this team is in a reset right now, and they just hired a bunch of people as they try to revamp player development, and they're doing all these things to try to get up to date with the industry, and they've kind of fallen back in recent years. How do you feel about what this team is trying to do this offseason, even if it means maybe taking a little bit of a step back this upcoming year?
I definitely think, like what you just said, there I don't think is a way to fix every glaring issue this team has in one season, in one off season, that is, even. So it might take taking a step back this next season. It might take, you know, not getting exactly to where you want to be, but realizing that this is, you know, for the long haul, and being able to make those general movements in the right direction and do what's best for the future, and not, you know, just make rash decisions to get immediate outcomes right away. So I think we are not going to maybe see the Cardinals get back to where we want them to be this upcoming season, but hopefully see them trend in the right direction.
Last thing for you, you mentioned you're an Indiana grad. Indiana football is having just this incredible season at 11-1. They're going to get into the college football playoff. The cynics out there have made the point that the schedule that they played was not a very good schedule. The top team that they played in Ohio State beat them pretty good, but you can't control the schedule. So talk me through your confidence level right now on the Hoosiers having a win or two still left in them this season in the college football playoff.
You know, I'm pretty confident. I think with any IU grad you'll talk to right now, we feel like we're playing with house money after all the seasons of IU football we've been through. So just being in this situation, we're all grateful for to begin with. But, you know, we don't pick our schedule. I joke that it's a nice schedule we finally got after years of playing in the Big Ten East with facing Michigan and Penn State and Ohio State every single year. But, I mean, the Cards, we drew the right hand this year. Things kind of fell our way. But I think with Cignetti, he's a veteran coach. He's got really disciplined guys. I think he has what it takes to, you know, win a game in the college football playoff. And you see the way the SEC is kind of beating itself up and all these weird outcomes out of it. I think they could catch a team at the right time.
Grace, great to get to know you a little bit. Enjoying being able to see you on Channel 4. Hopefully our paths are going to cross at some point in the near future. But encourage everybody to be watching you and the rest of the team with Tamar and Jacob as well there at First Alert 4. And appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Grace Ibarra. She is the new sports anchor and sports reporter at Channel 4 KMOV. Again, you can follow her on Twitter at GN Ibarra. That's GNYBARRA. Good to get to know her a little bit. We'll be seeing a lot more of her on TV moving forward. Of course, we'll get her back on the program at some point in the relatively near future. We will take ourselves a break. We've got more coming up. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to put the final touches on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. You are not going to want to go anywhere. We've got SLU Billikens basketball coming your way this evening. Billikens are out west, so that's why we still have it coming up so late tonight. SLU is going to match up this evening against San Francisco. So a battle of a couple Jesuit schools this evening, and we'll see whether or not the Billikens are able to put a really good effort out onto the floor. You know, from a record standpoint, SLU, they're in a perfectly good spot. They have a 5-2 record, but twice now we've heard from head coach Josh Schertz after games where maybe effort is the wrong word. I'd have to go back and look at the exact words that he used, but he certainly questioned the effort, did not like the way that his team played. He was not overly happy with what he saw against Jackson State this past Monday. That was a game that the team did win 74-66, and he clearly was not happy with their loss against Wichita State back in Kansas City on November 22nd when they ended up losing that game by an 88-63 score. So even beyond, not taking anything away from San Francisco, but even beyond what the final score is tonight, I think as I listen in to Josh Schertz after the game, I'll be interested to hear what he has to say about his team's effort. Because that's going to be, that's going to be of note. So they start at 9 o'clock. Our coverage is going to begin in about 45 minutes at 8:45. I believe we'll get a little bit of the Gas House Gang in there for you leading into that. As the Gas House Gang today, it was a really good conversation. Today was Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas doing it. And I was at home listening to it as they were doing it. And I hope you guys enjoy listening to it, because I certainly enjoyed being able to hear what they had to talk about on a few different things. You know, yesterday, Bernie and I certainly had the discussion about the new hires that the Cardinals are bringing in. And here's the thing I don't completely understand, because I've seen, and look, you can't put too much stock in like Facebook comments, right? Like that's just something that you should not do, and they don't speak for a vocal majority and things like that. But I am somewhat amazed. I talked about this a little bit with Dave Glover the other day. I got somebody texted me the other day into like the station text line, and they basically accused me of being very arrogant, very pompous, and I don't know if that's how I come across. I hope it's not. I don't think that's my personality. I don't think that's who I am. Maybe some people can disagree with that, but I believe strongly in the words that come out of my mouth. But at the same time, I'm always willing to listen to others and have my opinion change. And I think I do change my opinion on things as I hear other information. I like listening to people who are smarter than me, or people that can look at something in a different way. I think that's how we all become better. But I was thinking about it, because this person they came at me pretty good. About my arrogance and some other things, and talking about baseball. And this is where I started thinking on it. So I have some very strong beliefs when it comes to the game of baseball that to me are kind of undeniable, inarguable. And there are people out there that disagree with some of these things. And yes, I think they're just flat wrong. That's right. It's okay. It's okay. We can disagree in this world. I'm not mad at you. I think you're probably wrong. Not probably wrong. I do think you're wrong. That's and a lot of it has to do, and this is what I was talking about earlier today when I was on with the Dave Glover show, with Dave and with Kevin. I don't want to come across as arrogant or pompous or anything like that. That's not the goal. What people think of me is somebody who talks on the radio every night and wants to have as large of an audience as possible. Like it does, I'd be lying to you. It does matter what I think people think about me, and what people, not what I think, but what people do think about me. But sometimes there are just things that are said that I don't get where people are coming from on it. And I try not to spend too much time on it. But like yesterday with the performance coach being hired. Performance coach is a really big deal. Really, really, really big deal. And something that Bernie and I talked about yesterday when he was on it at 6:20. And something that Kevin and Bernie talked about a little bit today during the Gas House Gang. A performance coach is really important. Being able to have your body, you know, construct your body in a way that it can be most successful is an important part of sports. You do your craft with your body. So you want your body working as correctly as possible to give you every advantage in the world. I don't think that's some sort of crazy statement, but you would have thought from some of the comments out there that this is some sort of newfangled science, and how dare the Cardinals spend money on a performance coach? Like, why do you? And the old Stan Musial didn't need a performance coach. Bob Gibson didn't need a performance coach. And I get that they are great baseball players. They are some of the greatest baseball players ever to walk the face of the earth. And if they were playing today, they would be just as successful. But you know what? If they were playing today, they would they would love the performance coach. They would love somebody who could help tell them what they can do to be even better. And it's something that didn't even exist, really didn't exist before. But just because it didn't exist, just because we know more now, there's this thing where we know more now than we did previously. But when we try to use that information, it offends a certain part of the fan base. And I just don't understand that. We can have this conversation when it comes to analytics. All analytics is information. And I want as much information as possible because data is good. Now, can you overload yourself with data? Can you look at it in a way where it's not, where you are making conclusions that are not real? Like, yeah, like it's not perfect. And there are times where it can be relied on too much, but generally speaking, having more information is a good thing. So teams should be able to have more information. And I'm not trying to harp on this, but yeah, there's just this. So I saw a lot of responses on social media about this. The Cardinals are just adding more levels of management or more you know, levels of, I don't think the term bureaucracy was used, but just that sort of thing. And all they're doing is hiring people for jobs that you need to have to be a successful baseball team. You know, when you look at the teams out there that are most successful, they've got lots of people. You know, the performance coach specifically, has his last two stops were with the Giants when they were in their heyday and winning World Series, and then with the Dodgers most recently. And there's been no organization better than the Dodgers in recent years. Just because you're adding positions that were not previously there or were not previously filled or are being called something a little bit different, just because you're doing that doesn't mean you're adding some level of, it's not like adding more middle managers to a corporate structure. That's not what's going on here. And for people, you know, maybe that needs to be explained. Maybe that's something that needs to be, maybe when you see directors, because that's what those three guys were. They all got director titles, a pitching director, a performance director, a development director, player development. Maybe that's something that needs to be explained a little bit more, because you just see the press release and you see three directors are being hired and you feel like they're adding another level of middle management, for lack of a better term, in there. And that's not what they're doing. They're getting caught up to the industry. They're bringing in really, really smart people, and really smart people help teams function better. That's the bottom line here. I get some level of discomfort from some people who just want to see a team go sign the best possible players and try to win every year and that sort of thing. But that is a very simplified version of how you are successful in baseball. And bluntly, that's not the way it works. Even the teams that are super successful and spend tons of money, even the Dodgers, who can go give Shohei Ohtani a ridiculous contract, they are still developing players and they are still getting high-level players to their major league roster via their farm system. And when you are the Cardinals, and this is not me calling the Cardinals, you know, saying this is not me playing the small market card, not at all. Like the Cardinals can spend money. They can spend a respectable amount of money. I think once the player development system is humming along again, it's going to be fair to look at their payroll and compare it to where it has been recently and have a hope that that payroll starts to come back up again. And I think it will. But they need to produce more players out of the minor leagues. And if that's what it's going to take for this team to go win World Series again, if that's the eventual goal, because the way they're operating right now, this team isn't going to win a World Series. So the first step is what's going on right now. Chaim Bloom hires Rob Serfolio. Rob Serfolio hires the three guys yesterday, and then the three guys yesterday are going to go hire people, and they're all going to be really smart, and they're all going to be really good at their jobs, and they're going to make the team better. That's the goal. That's the idea. And there's been a bit of a brain drain when you go back to what this team was when Jeff Luna was around and when this team was the envy of just about every other team in baseball. It was filled. It was filled to the brim with incredibly smart people whose job it was to make other people better. Iron sharpens iron. And I'm not saying that the Cardinals didn't have any good people. They certainly did. They certainly did. There's a lot of good people in the organization that have been in the organization for a while that have done very, very, very good work. But there's not as many as there previously was. So every single time there's an announcement like yesterday where this person's being hired and this person is being hired, my suggestion to you, you don't have to take it, but my suggestion to you is instead of looking at it through the prism of, oh, they're adding more middle management, for lack of a better term, look at it as they're bringing in really smart people, and smart people make other people better. And when everybody's making everybody better, that is going to have an impact on the field, and that is going to have an impact when it comes to wins and losses. That is it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. When we'll get just a little while of the Gas House Gang, I believe, and then tonight at 9 o'clock, it is SLU Billikens basketball as they match up against San Francisco this evening on the road. That's going to be a 9 o'clock tip-off, so that means our coverage with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. is set to begin at 8:45. Thanks so much for being tuned in. Have a wonderful evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.